This is Kauai Soapbox Live with Felicia. I've got two wonderful guests in the studio with me. Let me just see if you're on, Melissa.
Hello.
Hello. And Renee?
Aloha.
Yes.
The opinions expressed during this program do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its board, underwriters, volunteers, or members.
Mahalo for listening to Kauai Community Radio and supporting us. So today we've got a really great show. We're really lucky and honored to be having several different people. We have Kirby Dick. Are you on the line?
I am, yes.
Yes, so he's calling in from California?
Yes.
So Kirby is the filmmaker for The Invisible War. I also have Renee Hamilton from Kauai's YWCA. And I have Melissa Norman, who is a concerned citizen who brought this issue forward, who saw your film and was moved by it.
Well, I'm really pleased that, she responded in that way.
Yeah, so to tell the listeners out there, The Invisible War is about sexual violence within the military. It's really revealing a lot that's been a problem for possibly decades. But it is a courageous film that you brought forward that has really made a change. And it's going to be shown this Friday at Kauai Community College at 6:30. Mm-hmm. And Tulsi Gabbard, our representative from the U.S. House, will be there. And Kirby, are you going to be here?
No, I'm not, unfortunately. I'd love to be, but I can't.
You're running.
I won't be able to make it.
Okay, but I know it's also going to be playing on the west side two nights, both Saturday and Sunday. And do you know what time?
6 o'clock.
6 o'clock. Uh-huh. And will that be at Waimea Theater?
Yes.
Okay, so that is closer to our base. So, Kirby, why don't you tell the listeners what the film is, the objective behind the film, what caused you to make it?
The film is called The Invisible War. It's about the epidemic of sexual assault in the U.S. military. In fact, there were some statistics that were released very recently from the Department of Defense, and they estimated that there were 26,000 men and women were sexually assaulted in the U.S. military in fiscal year 2012. And those numbers have been similar going back for decades. So I would estimate that between 500,000 and 1 million men and women have been sexually assaulted over the last several generations. So this film, looks at that, looks at the cover-up, and looks at the damage that is really being done to the individuals who are not only sexually assaulted, but in many cases, in most cases, when they came forward to report their sexual assault, the military actually turned on them and investigated them. And so it looks at that, and in many ways that destroyed their careers, that destroyed their lives. And it also, this is also not an issue where individuals are being affected, but it actually affects our national security because it affects unit cohesion. We're losing a lot of great men and women because of this, because this epidemic is instead of being handled properly, has been covered up.
And what I really got out of the film is this is really a men's issue because they're the perpetrators. So it's a victim issue, but it's the men are a big part of it. And then the other thing is, of that 26,000, about how many of those victims are men and how many are women?
Well, I'm glad you raised that, because in actual numbers, more men than women are sexually assaulted in the U.S. military each year. In fact, of those 26,000, nearly 14,000 were men, and as you said, most of the assailants are men. I would think it's about 97-98% of the assailants are men. There are a few women as well, but it is mostly men. And by the way, they are men who have assaulted many times, in most cases, many times previously. These are serial predators who've assault again and again. And these are not people that are strangers that jump out of a bush and assault these people. They're SEAL predators, very calculated. They select their victims, they groom them, they befriend them, and then they assault them when they're most vulnerable, usually giving them alcohol or, in many cases, drugs. So
now, that sounds to me like a female victim. I mean, would they be doing the same thing with a male victim?
Oh, absolutely. The exact same thing, yes. We've heard those stories again and again. Drugs, alcohol, almost in nearly every case, those are the drugs that are used.
So, I mean, the film went more in depth into the female victims. Like, there's certain things. Before I saw the film, I had a couple presumptions. One was that this would be male-on-female assaults in active duty, like in deployment. And the film was pretty much entirely in the United States. Right? Most of these acts of violence were when these people weren't, say, separated from their families or the rest of society where they could be presumably in regular relationships and it wasn't under the crucible of pressure of wartime activity.
Right. And I think that that's even if our servicemen are under pressure, that's absolutely no excuse for a sexual assault. I mean, these men are trained to perform, and most men in the military, are not rapists. This is, again, it's a small group of serial predators that assault again and again. And actually, the assaults happen in theaters of war. They happen at bases back home. This is the one thing I think that the film really has brought to the public and brought to Washington, which I think many people did think that these assaults were happening, if they were happening at all, were happening in theaters of war. No, it's happening in, it happens in every base and every branch, throughout the world.
And were these women mostly like late teens, early 20s?
Younger, it's more common that younger women and men are assaulted, but there's many cases where women were in their late 20s, 30s, even 40s, and men, certainly in their 30s that we spoke to, who were assaulted. So this is something, that is happening, really, when you have 26,000 men and women being assaulted, really all ages are being assaulted.
Why does this happen to men? Is it heterosexual men or homosexual men that are hurting the men?
They have not done studies on this. I made a film on clergy sexual abuse, and as many, in that case, there were some studies done, and at least as many of the clergy, male clergy who are assaulting younger boys were heterosexual as homosexual. So I wouldn't be surprised if this is the situation here. These are, rape is not a crime of sex, it's a crime of power.
Yes.
And so I think that this is not, people have talked about, that this is, just to go back to it, this is a situation where I would suspect that as many or more heterosexual men are doing the assaulting of men.
And it's to humiliate or demoralize or to hurt their victims, same as happens with the women.
Exactly. I mean, these are SEAL predators. This is, something that they get, obviously, a very sick kind of pleasure out of, and they do it again and again.
And the reason why I was bringing forward the male element is because many times when we speak about rape, it all ends up focused on the girl and what's wrong with the girl, or a lot of listeners sort of tune out because it's a women's issue, not a men's issue. But I really wanted to say, this is everybody's issue. It's not one gender or the other. This is something that affects humanity.
And, exactly. And it's not only because they're male victims, but I mean, it is, we all have, we all have mothers, many of us have wives or girlfriends and children. I mean, this is our society, And not only that, these are the men and women who have, are protecting us. I mean, the least we can do as a society is protect them from sexual assault from SEAL predators within their own military.
Hey, Kirby, this is Eric Cannon, the co-host.
Hi.
I just wanted to say I just finished watching the film just before coming here, and I wasn't expecting to see that in the part of the the film, I thought it was dealing completely with females, and then when it went into the kind of the male part of the film, I was really kind of blown away, just about how apparent it was, and all across the military system, it was pretty amazing to say. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's astonishing, and it's astonishing that the military has been able to successfully keep this covered up for so long. The way that they did that, and because, you know, people might remember there was Tailhook, there was the Air Force Academy, these scandals, and what the military did in those situations is first denied that it was even a problem. I mean, they attacked the credibility of the victim, and then when in certain cases where they were forced to admit that, you know, some of these things had happened, they then said, well, it was isolated to a particular group of people, a particular academy. Even though they knew at that time that that was not the case, that it was actually across the Air Force or, you know, in the Navy or really across the entire military. So up until very recently, really up until, our film came out at Sundance, the January 2012, and I think that's done a lot to really get the attention of Congress, the administration, and the military to the military's credit, they have finally, I think, acknowledged that this is a very significant problem. Secretary of Defense Chuck Hagel, in fact, at one point said it was the second most important issue to the military after Afghanistan. So they're acknowledging it. They have a long way to go, but at least they're acknowledging it, and that's an important first step.
You can tell from watching the film that the military is changing, though it may seem slightly. They are changing to make a difference in this. But I was really blown away when they talked about the commanding officers and how they are giving interviews and how saying if, you know, people reported rape under your command, your commanding officers would almost seem like make it seem as if it was your fault. It was almost as if it was your problem that this was happening. So
yes. No, I mean, in fact, my producer, Amy Zirian, and I, we spoke with three women who were single. Each of those women were raped by a different married man, and the women themselves were either charged or threatened to be charged with adultery. That's the kind of experiences they had, that the women themselves were getting investigated rather than the perpetrators.
It's from the numbers that it's shown, from the actual suspects, the actual people that were committing the rapes, it showed the amount of people that were actually pretty much got in trouble for what they had done, and the numbers were just astonishing. It seemed like it was almost impossible to get caught with the numbers that it showed.
Oh yeah, I mean, of those 26,000 sexual assaults in 2012, less than 1% resulted in a court-martial conviction. Mm-hmm. Most of these serial predators are getting off, mm-hmm. And a big part of the reason is because even though the military has made some changes in the military justice system, they haven't really made the major reforms that they need to make, which is right now the decision to investigate and prosecute these crimes is made by senior officers in the chain of command of the perpetrator and of the accused and the victim. And that puts them in a conflict of interest position. It really needs to be moved out of that chain of command and have trained military prosecutors who don't have a direct connection to the accused or the victim. They have to have those people making the decision. And in fact, that's what the Military Justice Improvement Act that Senator Gillibrand introduced in the Senate and Representative Tulsi Gabbard has introduced in the House, that's why it's so important we all get behind this, because this is the most important reform being proposed. It's an historic reform. It's a landmark reform. And this is the one reform that actually, I think, can bring down these numbers.
Go ahead. Hi, Kirby. Aloha. It's Renee Hamilton with the YWCA here on Kauai. And before I was the executive director, I was the program director for our sex assault treatment program for many years. And a lot of this is just, you know, ringing bells for me.
Yep.
You know, I also know when we work with victims who have been assaulted, you know, you're adding layer upon layer, because it's difficult enough, not even being in the military, to have some kind of justice for sexual assault. Normally, these cases, there are not eyewitnesses. It always kind of depends or boils down to he said, she said, or whoever the two parties are. And do you foresee, do those challenges continue to happen if it does go forward in the military as well? Have you heard that from your interviews and things?
Yeah, absolutely. I know there's no question investigating and prosecuting sexual assault crimes are among the most difficult, which is, again, why you want the trained prosecutors making those decisions, not senior officers in the chain of command who aren't trained to investigate and prosecute these. I mean, for example, we wouldn't expect a senior officer to go and operate a helicopter if he or she hadn't been trained. Likewise, you know, we shouldn't expect them to take on this very, very difficult task. The military, though, is in a unique position. It's a hierarchical position, and I think it has more control over its population than the civilian world. And actually, I think if they really got behind the changes that are being proposed, particularly this one by Gabbard and Gillibrand, I actually think they could bring down the numbers below the numbers of sexual assault in civilian society, and they could become a leader on this issue, but they have to step up and do that.
Kirby, this is Melissa. I listened to an interview that you did about eliminating racism in the military and how successful the military was with that when they threw open the doors and decided to deal with that subject, and that they could do the same with this.
Mm-hmm. They could. They could, because, you know, the military had a huge problem in the 40s and 50s and 60s with racism. There was race riots, and they undertook really a decade-long campaign to address that, and at the end of that decade, racism had declined so much that it was actually less in the military than it was in the civilian society. And then those men and women in the military left, went into civilian society, and took those values along with them. And I think if you look back over the last 50 years, racism has declined. It still exists, but it has declined. And I think the military deserves a lot of credit for that, and I don't think they get enough credit for that. And I think that in a similar way, the military could take a leadership position on this. And in some ways they have, in terms of they are emphasizing training a great deal right now. They're actually using the film as part of their sexual assault training program. Nearly all the branches are doing so. And we know that between a quarter of a million, maybe as many as half a million men and women in the military have seen the film. So, you know, the military is taking this issue seriously. On the training side, I think they really are starting to do a very good job. It's on the criminal justice side where they have to change the structure that they have right now. It's just allowing these serial predators to slip through the cracks because it doesn't have the best people, you know, the most knowledgeable people making the decisions.
And your film showed something that I thought was interesting, too, because a number of the women that you focused on actually had a long-term serious injury as a result of it. And that we see there how the VA didn't help them, and is that partly just because it's a rape situation, or is it just because they don't help anybody?
Well, I mean, the VA, you know, there's many wonderful people working the VA system. I think in many ways the VA is overwhelmed. You know, we went into these wars, and I don't think we funded the VA enough, as these, you know, men and women are coming back from wars or coming back from the experience of being sexually assaulted. I mean, it's not just women and men who are sexually assaulted. I mean, many men and women with PTSD from being in battle aren't getting the benefits and in some cases the health care they deserve. So this is a real problem. But up until very recently, and I still think it's a major problem, the VA is not giving benefits to women and men with PTSD that they've gotten from military sexual assault at the same rate that they're giving it to men and women who've you know, experienced PTSD from being in battle. Although even, you know, those men and women aren't getting the full benefits they deserve in many cases as well.
And there's many layers where this is a microcosm of what happens. I think that one thing that we see in the military is it's what people would call rank rape. You know, when you're having to salute your assailant.
Yeah.
When it's
somebody
right above you, and where I think there's a parallel to that is sometimes family violence. A person can't get out of a situation that they're in.
Right. Well, this, sexual assault in the military has been compared to incest because Mm-hmm. When you go through basic training, you're trained to look at everybody as your brother and your sister. You'll die for them. I mean, this is a bond, you know, a very unique bond is formed between these people. It's very unusual and very close and very important. And oftentimes these bonds last for life. So you trust these people and you trust, you know, your superiors. And so to be assaulted by them is a lot like being assaulted by someone in your family. And we've spoken to hundreds of men and women who, you know, had experiences where, they were assaulted, and then they either had to go back and work in the same unit where their perpetrator was, sometimes worked directly under their perpetrator. There's just been horrible stories. So it's that kind of experience that can cause very severe PTSD.
Mm-hmm. Have your victims that were featured in the film had any recovery emotionally as a result of being able to tell their story?
Yes, they have. I mean, I think it's been transformative for them. So many of these men and women thought that they were the only one, or it was a very unusual experience. And so when we got in contact with them and told them no, you're hundreds of thousands of men and women this has happened to, and many of them blame themselves. And so to be able to come forward and talk about this to us and who understood what they were going through, who really listened to them, I think was very, very important. And it also, I mean, this is something, some of these women and men have been living with for decades, and it's completely transformed and in many ways destroyed their lives. And so to be able to be take a trauma that was so deep and to be able to turn it into something positive, which is this film, I think has meant a lot, because every man and woman who participated in our film said that they did so because they didn't want this. They wanted to do everything they could to prevent another sexual assault from happening to another man or woman in the military.
When I was watching your film and I saw the man who had been through three different marriages and pretty much had his life ruined by the rape that had happened in the military. It took him 30 years to come out about being raped, and he was finally able to come out to it to his third wife, and he was so scared. It was the scariest moment of his life since then, and he was so scared that she would leave him, and he was able to kind of make a recovery from all the, you know, traumatic experiences that had happened to him. But, you know, just from the interviews, he seemed like a completely normal man. You know, you wouldn't ever expect anything maybe traumatic had happened to him. But, you know, then you interview his wife, and, you know, she could tell that there was something hidden there, something deeper and darker that she couldn't really figure out. And I think it was after 10, 12 years of marriage, she finally came out and told her everything. And it was pretty it was amazing. It was a very amazing film in how you filmed it and brought those across, so.
Well, I mean, with the men, the stories in some ways are even more devastating, because in most cases, these men, there's so much shame associated with male rape that these men, you know, sometimes didn't tell people for decades. They just lived with this experience, and in most cases, they, you know, attempted suicide some multiple times. This is also true in many of the women also attempted suicide, and it does raise this question about the suicide that are happening in the military as a whole, because we know those numbers have increased dramatically. And, you know, many times we don't know why, but I think there's a lot of speculation that many of these people may be victims of military sexual assault who either never told anyone about this, or when they did, that, you know, they weren't believed, or they weren't taken seriously, or in fact, in some cases, the military actually started investigating them. So, it's so devastating. I mean, sexual assault is a devastating psychological experience. There's no question, but and physical experience in many cases. But within the military, where it's kind of a unique situation where you can't leave. You have to, you know, report to work the next day. You can't go and live with your family. So you're in this environment, and if the military doesn't take care of these people, you know, after they're assaulted, particularly when they come forward and report, it really destroys them.
Mm-hmm. Well, Kirby, this is Melissa. I wanted to mention, go back to what you said a moment ago about listening, and what you and Amy Ziering did in making this film is that you listen to these people's stories. men and women who had been through such trauma and shame. And the stories were told so poignantly, and the film was completely riveting. And I feel like it's really important for our community to witness this film and to listen to these stories and to raise our awareness about what's happening by simply listening. I think it makes a huge difference. I know when my daughter, who's 13, told me that she thought I should see this film, I had a lot of resistance to it because I knew it was going to be a really difficult subject to expose myself to. But actually, once I got past that and watched the film, I was so completely moved and so touched by the bravery of these men and women and their integrity and their strength and courage that I just felt called to action. And but whether somebody feels called to do something or not, I think simply the act of watching the film, it's on Netflix and iTunes, and it's going to be here on Kauai at 3 showings and on Oahu on Friday also. I really hope people come out and join us and have that experience with us together.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is, I mean, I know that there's a large, you know, military population on in Hawaii, and this is something that's, it, you know, whether you, you know, you're in the military, whether you have loved ones in the military or you haven't, it's a good, you know, I think it's good because you obviously learn about something that's very important to our country, but also the dialogue that happens afterwards is I think very profound, and I think it's an opportunity for, you know, people, you know, whether they have experience in the military or not, to have this discussion together, because this is not just the military's problem. The military is our military, and we are responsible for the men and women in that military. The entire society is.
I think you're so right, and I never thought about that before I saw this film. I thought of sort of unconsciously saw myself as separate, but I couldn't help feeling when I listened to those stories and so impressed with those people that I just couldn't stand there while this was going on.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, these are, you know, these are our brothers and sisters, really. And as a society, you know, we need to take care of everyone. Just again, just like they're taking care of us.
Yeah, and I'm hoping too that by showing this film, any opportunity to broaden the public's understanding about the effects of this kind of crime and violation against one's personhood, I think will just elevate the understanding of sexual assault in general, which is fantastic, Kirby. And, you know, any tool, but a powerful tool like this can just make a huge difference. So mahalo, big thank you for to you and to all your crew and everybody who participated in this.
Yeah, it creates a shared memory. You are exactly listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, and pretty soon, Kirby, we will be joined. You'll stay on the line for a little bit with us with Tulsi Gabbard. She'll be calling in very soon. I appreciate the impact that you guys are making. I appreciate that our representative is one of the leaders in the country for trying to create effective change, and that what you spoke about with elevating positive growth towards racism, I like what you're saying. If we can eliminate it somewhat in the military, that, or at least lessen it significantly and raise awareness with it in the military where it's easier to control behavior, that will bleed out into the rest of society. Because I do think in regular society, the incidence of this kind of violence, at least to women, is higher. I don't know about men. Maybe like men that are in prison or men that are in positions of where they are held in subordinate power structures. But for women, it's very profound.
Yeah, no, there's no question. I'm not sure if it's higher, but it's certainly extremely significant. There's one other thing I'd like to say, which is that, you know, you're not only very fortunate to have Representative Gabbard, but also Senator Hirono, mm-hmm. who's actually a real leader in the House on this issue, and is
in the Senate.
You know, very,
you mean Senate.
I mean, in the Senate. I'm sorry, in the Senate. Thank you.
Tell me about that, because I'm not aware of what she's doing.
Well, she's one of the co-signers of the, and again, I believe it's the Military Justice Improvement Act on the Senate side, that Senator Gillibrand's bill, and she came on very early. She's been very strong in the hearings, the first Senate hearing on this issue in 10 years. And she was, she asked some very pointed questions. But she's been a real leader on this. So Hawaii is well represented in terms of people who are really, trying to tackle this issue. So thank you.
Yeah, we invited Senator Hirono. She can't make it, but she is going to be sending a very special message. And to the showings that we have on the west side, she's going to be sending a representative there as well. So she knew we were doing this and really very supportive of all of our efforts. So big thank you.
Oh, I'm happy to hear that. Yeah. And we're probably one of the few states that's represented 75% female.
Yeah.
And yes.
I think that women are going to see this issue differently than guys probably.
Well, that, you know, it's there are now 20 senators, female senators, and I don't think it's a coincidence that the Senate has really jumped mm-hmm. forward on this issue, because it is being led by, you know, many female senators, Senator McCaskill, Senator Hirono, Senator Gillibrand. There are some, you know, male senators as well, Senator Blumenthal from Connecticut, who's been, you know, long fighter on this issue. But, yes, I mean, we're very fortunate as a country to have, at least 20, female senators. Obviously, that's a very low number, but it's better than it was, and it's making a difference.
Yeah. Well, you know, this morning I was talking to my favorite chiropractor, and I was explaining what's been happening in the military with sexual assault, and he said, I just can't believe that. I don't believe that's true. I just can't believe that. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, why can't you believe that? And he said, because I wouldn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
I think that might be something that happens for men, that it's just so difficult for them to imagine what a predator's mindset is like.
Yeah. No,
that
they
feel confused.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, it's the same in the civilian world, too. Mm-hmm. Most sexual assaults are caused by serial predators. And most men are, you know, obviously not rapists. So, but I think, I think people are also surprised, because they think that, you know, how can this happen to people in the military? How can people in the military do it? In some ways, you know, if the military doesn't get a handle on these serial predators, they're kind of in a perfect position, because they can use rank. For example, they can go to someone who's a very, you know, much lower ranking and say, you know, come to my apartment at, you know, at midnight. And you know, that's an order you have to obey. So the military, you know, needs to really get a handle on this issue. I think they can. And I think now is the opportunity, because right now, I mean, the best way to really address an issue, a real problem like this, is to be open and public about it. And I think they're still afraid of that, because they're afraid of recruitment. But right now, recruiting issues of not being able to get enough men and women in the military. But right now, we're downsizing, so it's a good opportunity for them, another reason for them to step forward and address this issue, because people, more and more people are aware this is a problem. In 10 years from now, if we find ourselves in another conflict when we need to start increasing the recruitment rate, this could become a national security issue. So now is the time, for them to step up and particularly address the criminal justice side of this issue.
They definitely need to start doing something about this now. I mean, in your documentary, you show different news reports of rape being reported, and, you know, it's just kind of brushed under the rug, it seems. And this is just such a huge documentary, and after seeing this, I almost feel bad to say it, but at the same time, not after watching your documentary, that I would highly recommend any female that was entering the military from seeing this film, at least, before considering it again, because, I mean, if I had a female friend that was entering the military, I'd really try and stop her from entering after seeing this film. And it's a sad thing to say, but you see a lot of these women from military families and military history, you know, they enter the military and everyone's really supportive of it, and then they get stuck in these positions where they're being raped continually, and any time they try and report it, they're almost assaulted for trying to report it. So, yeah, it's I think they really need to do something about this as soon as possible.
That's a really good point. And a local mother here told me that her daughter hoped to join the Air Force, but, you know, she was having those same concerns. And I said, well, that's why we need to be a part of this, so that, you know, she has a right to do that if that's what she wants to do.
This is everybody's problem, not just the military.
And my guess would be, Kirby, you know, and you may, because I know you've talked to a lot of people, that this happened years ago, but even before the increased presence of women, of females in the military, there were men. And I can guarantee, because we've had people who have been retired in the military for many years come to our program here on Kauai. So it's happened ever since, I believe, since we've had military. And I think part of what's happening now is it is coming to a forefront, because now we have females as well. And, you know, Kirby, I don't know how far back you went in terms of being able to reach out to people and hear their stories.
Well, we, you know, we spoke to, you know, Vietnam era women, certainly. And, you know, we've heard, you know, people talk about, you know, Korean, war era, women and experiencing sexual assault. So, yeah, I mean, I think that, I mean, you know, we're fully supportive of women being in the military. We think women should, you know, be able to, you know, access, you know, any role or any job that a man has. And I think that's a very good thing for our military. I mean, it makes our military stronger.
That was one of the most impressive things about the film, when you saw the competence and the capability and the intelligence of these women that, you know, served the military for often many years before something happened, and how their lives were devastated.
Devastated. I do have Tulsi on the phone. Tulsi, are you there?
Aloha.
Aloha. So you're with you're in a crowd, and Kirby Dick is also
hey,
on
Kirby,
there.
How are you?
I'm very good. Hey, great to speak with you again.
Likewise. Look forward to seeing you.
Yes.
So we thank you. We were thanking you, Representative Gabbard, for really backing up these changes in the military structure. And what would you like to share with Kauai?
First of all, thank you for having us on your show today. And really, I've been following your Facebook messages in really bringing to light not only the film Invisible War, which tells some incredibly moving stories, but really bringing people to a point of understanding where we are, the problem and the epidemic that exists, as well as what we can do about it. And that's where, you know, I was so happy to meet with Kirby and Amy a few months ago, and to see how far we've come even in a short period of time is encouraging, and now where we need to go. I was very proud recently to join a strong bipartisan group of legislators from both the House and the U.S. Senate as we introduced the Military Justice Improvement Act. You know, I've been a company commander in the Army. I've been a platoon leader. I've also been a lower-ranking enlisted soldier, and so I've seen and experienced a lot on both sides and can speak from firsthand experience about the necessity to make sure that, A, we have a victim-centered response, first and foremost, and, B, that we take away any ability for an individual to overturn an independent investigation or to abuse their position of being responsible to lead soldiers. I think there is a huge culture change that has to happen, but we're starting to see, because of this heightened attention, because of people feeling comfortable talking about this more and more, that this culture change has an opportunity to take place.
Yeah, I mean, I just second everything that she said. I mean, things are beginning to happen. You know, the military is really beginning to take this seriously. But I would just, again, I mean, I was so pleased to see that you had, introduced the Military Justice Improvement Act into the House. because it's so obviously, as you said, it's bipartisan. There's both the Senate and the House. This is something that has to come. Congress has oversight, and this is the, you know, I think the single most reform that that Congress can get behind single most important reform that Congress can get behind to address this issue. So thank you.
It sounds like there's pretty broad spread support in the House and Congress. I mean, should people be writing and putting forward things to support this? Is the president likely to sign on to this? What is the opposition? Is there much opposition?
Well, coming from what I've seen and the response that I've heard from my colleagues in the House, I've gotten a lot of appreciation from folks and a lot of support from people on both sides of the aisle who want to do whatever we can do collectively to be able to make sure that this transparent, fair, accountable structure is in place, that we're strengthening the process and creating a culture where there is a victim-centered response. We've heard from the Secretary of Defense. You know, he addressed West Point cadets at their graduation, where the highlight of his speech was talking about how sexual assault in the military is absolutely unacceptable. We heard the President addressing Annapolis graduates recently as well, where that was the hallmark of his message. So I think we're seeing from leaders in the Department of Defense, from the President, from the House and the Senate, a recognition that this problem has to be solved. There probably will be disagreements amongst different stakeholders in saying, well, it should be done this way or shouldn't be done that way. I think there are some concerns amongst some folks in the military who would like it to stay within the chain of command, but I think overwhelmingly, again, it's about education and it's about not taking away the command structure that must exist within the military, but it is recognizing that both men and women are being sexually assaulted within the ranks, and that is absolutely unacceptable, and making it so that we have a process in place where a victim knows that they have someone to go to who will be independent, they will be fair, and it will be a safe environment for them where they don't have to worry about retaliation. They don't have to worry about their career being damaged, and that the result of those investigations, the result of the prosecution, will happen independently of somebody who this service member has to work for.
So when we look at something like this Military Justice Improvement Act, this is my naivete on government issues, will it get rolled into some larger bill? Because what we see is kind of a pattern is if something wants to be squelched or hidden or stopped, it gets rolled into something large like the appropriations bill, and then so it can be voted down for reasons that have nothing to do with this. Like we saw that in that GMO, they call the farmer assurance provision. There's things where it gets clouded into another issue, and then everybody votes against it. And then for us, when we're seeing these things, and we go, wow, she even put this thing forward. Why did she vote against it? Or, you know, because it seems like so many of these really critical issues, the way to defeat them is to bury them in a bill that supposedly has something more important on top of it.
I'm going to just jump in. I'm going to let Representative Gabbard, answer that. I mean, she certainly understands the ins and outs of Congress. I just wanted to, I'm going to have to leave. I have
okay.
an appointment. But I just wanted to thank you. I wanted to thank Tulsi, again, for everything you're doing. And, look forward to seeing you. And I'm so glad that, you know, people are, paying attention to this issue in Hawaii. So thank you. Thank you all very much.
Thank you, Kirby.
Thanks, Kirby.
Thanks, Kirby.
Okay. Aloha.
Thank you.
So
you bring up a very good question, and to tell you exactly how this will pass is something that I can't do. I think that when you look at the details of this legislation and you look at the very heightened level of attention that's being placed on this issue, I can foresee this bill passing as a standalone measure, either in the Senate first or the House first. We'll see what happens there. But I can see this bill moving along on its own because of the absolute urgent necessity for it. Is there a possibility it could be folded into a Defense Authorization Act, sure, that's possible. But, you know, the Defense Authorization Act, that wouldn't be a terrible thing, because that's something that, in all likelihood, has the best possible chances of passing and being signed into law. So I will tell you that we will look creatively for every avenue possible to make sure that this gets passed and that it goes to the president's desk for signature, whether it be as a standalone piece of legislation or whether it serves as a section or a part of another piece of legislation that's passing. Because the bottom line is we want to get this passed into law and implement it as soon as possible.
Well, that's reassuring. I really appreciate that. I hope sometime when you're over here, I would love to just have you into the studio here with us and just help our community understand a little bit more about how these bills get structured and put forward. There's so many issues that we follow, and at the state legislature we've been really, really tight on it. I appreciate that you have supported Hawaii with the GMO labeling bill coming forward, and that's been really, really good. Thank you so much for that. And I imagine as a freshman representative that you're running into a pretty big learning curve. I know that as I'm watching this as a public affairs programmer, it's a fine needle to thread a lot of these issues. And so when we look at why something is denied or voted for, it seems like it's very, very complicated. And I would love to have you in here helping us know how we can be the most effective constituent group at creating change, because there's a lot of things that are important to our community. And I appreciate your coming to this event on Friday. And are you going to be around for Saturday and Sunday?
I am not, unfortunately. I have to head back to D.C. over the weekend. We've got votes on Monday, so
okay.
I am on Kauai only for Friday. I have to head. I think I'd take the last flight out.
Okay, and then will you have time to be talking to people about the military issue? Like if there are people that have been victimized themselves, or
I hope so. I look forward to being able to spend as much time there as I can. If I'm not able to be there personally, I have a constituent services representative who's from Kauai. She's there all the time. Her name is Kaulana Finn. She is available. I have folks who are just a phone call away in my Honolulu office as well, and our team up in D.C. So we've got a great, strong team ready to support those who may have some unique needs, whether they feel comfortable addressing them in a public forum or would like to be able to address them by telephone or by email or meeting. We can absolutely make that happen. And I just want to say, before I've got to go here, I'd love to be able to talk with you again and to share some of the ins and outs of different pieces of legislation that are moving. And, you know, when there are those contentious issues that come up or there are confusing things that are happening, I appreciate the opportunity to be able to share a little bit about the process to help people better understand what's happening, because, you know, information is power, right? So having people who understand what we are doing as we work for you, for the people of Hawaii and the people of our country, I think makes us all do better at what we need to do.
Thank you. Is there anything else you would like to share with the Kauai listeners on any topic?
Well, I really appreciate the opportunity, and I hope everybody comes out at 6:30 on Friday to KCC to see this very, very important film and to be a part of the discussion that we'll have. We need to recognize that over half of the assaults that occur within the military affect men. Mm-hmm. Men are victims of these assaults more than women are. There's an even greater number who are affected outside of the military in our communities. And the more recognition that we can have on this epidemic, the better off we'll be and the more safe our brothers and sisters and family, friends, and neighbors will be. So thank you very much. I look forward to seeing everyone on Friday.
Thank you
so much for calling. Aloha.
Thank you. Aloha.
I think that Tulsi brought up a very good point about the men, and when I've been out mm-hmm. and about talking about this, I'm sort of liking it to what came to our awareness about the Catholic Church, that, you know, these people are predators and they know where to find their prey and they know where they can get protected. Mm-hmm. And it's important that we raise our awareness about what's happening and not hide from it.
Yeah, the YWCA here as well, just to let our listeners know too, that we also do, we're victim-centered in terms of support for victims' families, their loved ones, whoever that may be. We also do the treatment for sex offenders. And, the whole issue of it's the vulnerability and that it is pretty calculated. I don't think it's something that they sit and write about, but it's definitely calculated in knowing who is vulnerable. When you talked about, higher risk, we talk about teenagers, we talk about young women. And that's because when you talk about the balance of power, who's got more power? And especially when you think about young children, who's got power? So when we bring that into our conversation, I think it helps to broaden our understanding a little bit of motivation and who these people are and, whether they're pedophiles or going after adult victims. They're definitely predators. They're definitely, calculating and, the whole behind the motivation is if I don't get caught, there's nothing to keep me from not doing it again. There's such a lack of empathy. It's key that sex offenders, predators, there's no empathy, not understanding how am I impacting this other person. And so there's no motivation for them to stop unless there is justice, unless they get caught. So the more that we can talk about this, encourage people to come forward, even though it's challenging, I think we have to be realistic about that. When people come forward to make a police report about sexual assault, and we can just talk about Kauai, our little island, right, where everybody knows everybody, and it's difficult. It gets into that, again, that believability of he said, she said, or whoever is involved.
And even if the person gets in trouble, it doesn't change that it happened.
Right, exactly.
I mean, it's good changed, right. for they get in trouble, but it doesn't change that it happened. Mm-hmm. And I kind of want to give a little tip to my friends that are teenagers, because what I see all the time, they remind me of kittens in the parking lot. And yeah. At some level, there's an instinct out there, and, you're young and beautiful, and it is time as animals to be having babies.
Mm-hmm.
And so people are throwing out cues that they're not even aware of. Mm-hmm. And I watch so many young women wearing clothes that would take maybe 15 seconds mm-hmm. to get past. It in some level, if there is a predator out there, it's like putting a steak in front of somebody starving. And I also see a lot of these same people wearing next to nothing with a ponytail or a braid or something, which is one of the most vulnerable ways that you could wear your hair.
Mm-hmm.
Because what happens is somebody can just grab your hair,
mm-hmm.
they grab that ponytail, and they have you essentially by the neck.
Right.
So people shouldn't be running around in a place where they're
dressed.
I want to be careful that we don't blame the victim.
Yeah. I'm not, but I'm just saying at some point you have to be
well, and that's
cautious.
Not actually the largest population, because when we talk about when you talk about maybe within the family, that has nothing. There's no factor, right? Or you're at and most of the time, like Kirby was saying, it's not the person jumping out of the bushes. They're using a relationship, whether you know them because they're within your family or a close family friend or an acquaintance or something. So they use that relationship to help protect them.
Well, I'm probably a little sensitive because I had a very bad experience at 17.
Sure.
And it was the jump out of the bushes type of thing. And I have been in plenty of environments mm-hmm. where everybody there has had their own terrible, horrific experience.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it might be 10, 12 people.
Sure.
Almost all of them went through it. Late teens, early 20s, and is a violent experience.
Mm-hmm.
It's about how do you hold on and keep your own life.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can have full-on PTSD about it. And so I'm not blaming a victim. I'm just trying to say to those people who aren't in the situations, because I guess I connect more with something that was absolutely unforeseen, and those things happen all the time.
Right.
And so I'm glad that on Kauai it doesn't seem to happen as much, but it, you would know more than I do, but it does happen a lot.
Yes.
It happens an awful lot, so... I'm just saying, in love to people out there, be conscious of how you wear your hair. Be conscious that that's not a like a sexy wear, way of wearing your hair.
You're talking about somebody grabbing on,
grabbing the ponytail, you know, because there are people who just hurt somebody and things like that.
Looking at it in two points of views, I think at some point a female has to be cautious of how they're wearing their clothes and where they're wearing it. But at the same time, it's nice to live in a place where girls can grow up without having to have that fear, you know, without having to have that close personal experience, because maybe it's in a time in our in our society where we're slowly moving away from that type of nature. But, yeah, I can, you can definitely see it from both points of view completely. And we have some calls building up.
Make your comment, Melissa, and then we'll take the call.
I was just going to say I was speaking with Jennifer Anthony today, who is a forensic nurse on the island who responds to sexual assault. And she was saying that one of the most important things to do is to really listen when somebody tells their story and to really be with them. And it really occurred to me that that's what I think is so essential about what's happening with the screening. I think it's very important for people to go witness and listen to the stories that these men and women have been telling in the invisible war. Just listening and experiencing this together, I think, will be a very powerful experience personally and with our community.
And you are listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea, also now on Oahu K284AL Haleiwa, and we have some callers on the line. Aloha, you're on the air.
Aloha. I've been waiting a little while here. I would just like to say I'm going to have to agree with the moderator here. You know, I'm married to a really beautiful woman, but it's like, you know, men are just men, you know, and when you got somebody being provocative, you know, it's hard sometimes to just pretend like we're equals and everything else being equal, you know, there's no difference between the sexes. But there is, of course. And women bear responsibility for how they comport and how they dress. You know, of course, I want to say this 30 years ago when I wanted, you know, every woman to look like a, you know, like a loose tramp, but I'm not in that place anymore. And women do have to take responsibility because especially the younger guys and all men to a certain extent sometimes, you know, are vulnerable to this, to sensation or to like provocation. And I just, that's all I have to say.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I know when I was young, my thing was which neighborhood I moved into. And I came from a small town where you trusted everybody and the doors were always open. And it never occurred to me that anybody would be watching me. And I was taking a nap and had my door unlocked. And it turned out that this was a serial person who put a lot of different people in the emergency room. And I don't think that I did something other than being clueless. And but those things happen, and when we look at the animal world, like roosters are definitely batter their hens to the point of killing them, some of them, you know, there is all this violence that is in animal nature. And so it's I mean, I'm all about blaming the perpetrator completely, but and still yet it's about like a form of self-defense. I want to give a little acknowledgement to you, Eric. You got first place in your Jiu-jitsu?
Yeah. In my division, for the purple belt division, 180 to 190, I got first place in the state championship this weekend, and I got third place in the experts division for no-gi. So, yeah.
Yay.
Really
happy
about that. Congratulations.
And when I was a teenager after that point, I actually did taekwondo for 3 years, 5 nights a week, and it was really therapeutic for me, though I do think at some level I was looking for a fight. My master said it's common with little women, you know, because all of a sudden it's a new method for being able to express yourself. And I would have been really willing to do, you know, take on somebody.
Sure.
But I do think self-defense is a valuable thing to have, because when you know that you are solid, that's another really good point.
Like Kirby said earlier, you know, when these men and women are drugged, they're very unable. Or drugs slipped into a drink, they're very unable to defend themselves. And I'm just a little concerned, you know, mixing in some of the talk about, you know, the way, you know, blaming the women, you know, for the way that they're dressed. I don't believe that that's true. I think that men are totally capable to restrain themselves and take a deep breath and walk away. I think if it's a serial predator, you're dealing with a very different kind of person, and they're going after children, they're going after women of all ages and men, and it's a very different situation.
We have to go back farther, Melissa. I think, you know, going on what you're talking about, really going far back, and it goes back to that whole conversation about gender and how women are seen in our culture, in our society, from how far back, right? And I think we're still struggling with that in many ways, instead of being just property or seeing women as, you know, the bearers of children and I can do with whatever I want to. When I hear that conversation, I want to always come back and say, you know, let's go deeper instead of just looking at our clothes, because, you know, and then what else do you want to say in terms of the relationships too, of how we communicate with each other. I talk about this in domestic violence, where it's always, where, you know, why does the woman go back? And I always want to step in and say, why do the men continue to batter? If we don't hold whether the offender is a male or a female, holding the offenders accountable for their behavior, because nothing makes them act that way. They're always making that choice, whether to batter, whether to assault somebody. It's their choice to do that.
We have a caller. Yeah, I want to come back to this conversation, and I also want to talk about the role of the bystander.
Yeah, so we have a couple callers backing up. I just wanted to say, you know, we only talked about it for like 1 minute, but I want to go back onto the topic of self-defense and especially Brazilian jiu-jitsu. So we'll definitely get back to that.
Okay. You're on the air. Thank you for holding.
Hello.
Hello.
Is it me?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yes, I have a comment regarding making... I'm sorry, I had to regroup here. I'm kind of offended and frustrated but appalled by the fact that, you know, we think of women that are dressing the way they do, or young women up to older age women. I'm appalled at the way that the young men and the older men dress with their swim shorts down to the point where you're afraid to look, because I don't think it's funny.
Okay.
I don't think it's funny at all.
But it probably doesn't turn you on.
I'm not talking about me.
Okay.
I'm talking about the young girls.
Okay.
Going, you know, and the challenge to get into those.
Mm-hmm.
It's not always the guy trying to get into the girls' camp.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, the way that some of these people are dressing, and I'm not only talking young boys, young surfers, whatever. I was just sitting here listening while I was waiting in the grocery parking lot, and some of the way that these young men were dressed, the girls were all just drooling all over them, so they were kind of following them. I mean, it's not always the women that are the ones that are the aggressors.
But I think there's a big difference between drooling and raping.
No, I'm sorry. I am in the medical profession. I have known of women that have attacked men, young boys.
Sure. Yes, sure. Yes, that's true.
And you know,
it's not all the women's fault. And then, of course, it gets turned around.
And I didn't mean to offend when I was calling attention to that. I used to work in the industry of fashion, and so I'm used to being at the trade shows and the clothing shows, and very much 100% what's being sold behind the clothes is sex. It doesn't mean the person who purchases
completely.
But it is blatant and clear in the merchandising and the marketing when you're there as a buyer. And so,
well, why is it that, you know, men and young men, older men, can walk into a store with their half their private hanging out, but if a woman were to walk in with her breast half hanging out, you know, it's not they would be, you know, told to please cover up, and especially if even they're breastfeeding, you know, it just doesn't make sense.
So I think it goes back to really the issue that Renee was talking about, and to me that's a more important issue to talk about, which is how women have been treated in our culture for a very long time as property, as something to do with whatever you want, as an object for pleasure.
I just had to throw that in.
Absolutely.
That, you know, guys have to think about the way they're dressing.
Yeah. Yes. Hey, we really appreciate
it. So thank you so much.
Thank you for calling. Aloha.
Aloha, you're on the air.
Hello.
Thank you for holding.
Hi. I have a couple points to make, and one of them is I do understand that the fashion and TV industry and media industry does promote sex, but I also feel that you can't censor what someone wears. It's a form of self-expression that all our young people come into, and I think it's beautiful. I think it's body awareness. But I think the most important thing is education, because there's no stopping any of that. I think it's really important from a very young age that our kids at school, at home, at community events are educated to really care about one another and respect one another. That's where the solution really lies.
Yeah, you're talking about communicating.
I agree.
Exactly.
Yeah, I do too.
Another point I really wanted to make, because I want the other callers to be able to call in, was I really appreciate the support of outreach groups like the YWCA and support groups like that, because I have seen it firsthand that within the process of being violated and making, first of all, to have the bravery to make a report and come forward, and to look at the long road ahead of court, there's this time lapse that where you can tend to question your decision, you lose your momentum. And I think the support that the YWCA has, or any other kind of outreach group like that, is just so crucial to keep someone in that place where of self-respect and bravery to go forward to do all these things. I've seen it in TROs. Mm-hmm. When you go and get a TRO against someone, it's really difficult. There's this time lapse of like where you start to go like, am I doing the right thing? Should I even do this? Was he even like,
well, I think even when it is very clear and there's no hesitation, very rarely does something get done.
Right.
That's what I've seen.
Complicated process. It's actually the victim has to go out and do a lot of the legwork to even get a TRO.
And I think that
I think that having a support group like the YWCA or any other kind of outreach group like that is so crucial within that moment. And they should have that kind of outreach groups within the military too, because it's what keeps you brave. It's what keeps you supported. It's what keeps you sane and just comforted.
Yeah. One of the really inspirational figures from my high school just called in, and she just completely agreed with everything you were saying. And she agrees it's all in the education system. Mm-hmm. If we really want to make a change.
It really is in the education. It's about teaching our kids to really love one another. Mm-hmm. support one another, and you can wear whatever you want.
Mm-hmm. But I think the police is,
and you will be like cared for as a human being.
Well, and the education it's, you know, when we talk about the laws, you know, I mean, going down, if you talk about the nitty gritty in terms of the law of sexual assault, and it's different by state by state, but the key concept across the board is all about consent. And when you start, you know, directing the conversation towards consent and what does that mean, and you start, you know, talking with young people, and we are in the schools, you know, hopefully can continue to do that to educate so that they have a good understanding about that respect. How do you communicate with each other? How do you navigate those situations? And the idea about consent, yes, you can give consent if you're of legal age. The same thing, though, is true, is you can withdraw that consent at any time.
Yes.
And, you know, when you're talking about the clothes, one thing I always kind of joke about is, well, you know, if I bought a dress or whatever, I don't remember giving away my right of self-determination or my self-expression, right? And I have a clear understanding about consent. And I think that if we practice more in schools, you know, and right behind you here, caller, if we practice more opportunities with our young people, with our youth, with our adults, because it's not easy to do always.
Well, then it's also like education of, like, you can watch all these media shows. You can listen to all kinds of music that might not be, that is very sexual. But it's just like, listen to all those, but also be aware of it. And
I think when women allow themselves to be objectified, now I don't want to be, I'm not blaming the victim. And what a comment, like I didn't mean to make too much a comment. Everybody's jumping on it about the clothes. And at some point, it's willful ignorance. But we can look at the extreme example of when people are in burkas, right? It's like putting a big black bag over somebody's head.
Right.
All right, so they don't even, they can't even look at the sky, but still yet those women are abused.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I wanted to just speak on your, what I think that you were trying to say, Felicia, is that women do need to learn how to defend themselves.
And situational awareness.
Right. And I think that's a very good, strong point.
I think that's a really strong
point. This kind of violence happens mostly to young and vulnerable people. Once somebody's got a little bit of confidence, they're a little bit older, they make better choices of where they put themselves, what they're doing, they have just the chi to throw that power right back, and I don't think it happens near as much, and it can happen.
Well, but when we go back to that, the concepts and the ideas of power and control, right, where if you have more confidence, but I also know people who have come in who actually, I was thinking about this example that we've talked about at the schools. This woman who was sexually assaulted once just vowed it would never happen to me again, right, and went and actually climbed her way up and became a black belt in karate or one of the martial arts. And one time she found herself with a friend who sexually assaulted her, and You never know how you'll react. You try. And, you know, I keep thinking about the people in the military, too, who are training every single day in terms of for violence.
Yeah.
And it is such a insidious kind of a thing. When we talk about how you're most vulnerable or it's a trust issue, you know, if you know that person, if you have been used to agreeing with them, you know.
Well, they've been trained to obey orders.
Exactly.
And then when they're ordered, come in this room.
You trust friends. You trust family friends. You don't think that that's ever going to happen to you. And so, you know, whether it's the fight-flight reaction, it's going to vary from person to person.
And, caller, we have other people holding.
Okay. Well, thank you all. And
thank you
for all the good stuff for bringing awareness to this film. I'm really looking forward to it.
I hope to see you at the screening.
Good.
Okay.
Thanks for a great call. Aloha.
Hello.
Hello, you're on the air. Thank you so much for holding.
Okay, is it me that you're talking to?
Yes, it is.
Yes.
Okay. Sorry.
Sorry, we had a lot of callers.
I was very taken back to hear somebody call in and say, well, the women are provoking me by the way they dress. And I, you know, first of all, it might arouse somebody sexually. That doesn't make that person a rapist.
Right.
And the fact of the matter is rape is about power, and it's not really a sexual it's a sexual assault, but it's not about sex, okay? Mm-hmm. So you could be wearing your mother's oldest gray coat, and if someone wants to rape you, he will. If, even if you're wearing a bathing suit, they're going to rape you. It's not what you wear. It's not where you how you wear your hair. It's whether or not the person who is sick is out there, is out on a power trip, and that's the deal.
A completely normal man walking down the street isn't going to see a woman scantily dressed and just jump on her and become
a
rapist.
And I don't think they're, and even if they would like to, they wouldn't do it. I mean,
exactly.
Like, oh, God, that girl's sexy. But the point is, finding somebody sexy is not the motivation for rape.
Right. Yeah.
The motivation for rape is power. Mm-hmm. And that's why in the armed forces it's so disgusting that the top commanding officers have let people off the hook.
Completely.
You know, I mean, and I just think we need to, and you know, we're born naked. Men, boys, babies, boys and girls. We come in naked, we go out naked. And we should be able to walk around the streets naked and not be attacked by crazy people. And these men, and
agreed.
Education is very important. Because, I mean, I definitely think mothers and fathers need to teach their children to be ladies and gentlemen and to dress appropriately for appropriate situations. I mean, that's fine, but that's not really what causes rape.
Yeah, it comes down to education.
You know, education and also what comes down to is realizing there are some people who are so insecure that they want to overpower you, whether you're a boy or a girl. They want to overpower you and foist their power upon you. That's
so,
rape. It's not sex.
So this
thank
brings
you
us
for
to
your
the
call. I really
yeah,
appreciate
thank you
this.
So much.
Okay.
Appreciate it. Aloha.
Bye.
So that brings me to the point that I wanted to get back to, which was self-defense. And, you know, I almost look at martial arts in a completely new sense now that I've trained Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu for the past 7 years about. And what Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu focuses on is technique. If you don't know, it's it doesn't focus on punching or kicking. It focuses on limb breaks and blood chokes. It's pretty much
lethal moves, right?
Lethal moves, but yet you don't need to kill the person. You can easily defend yourself without harming them. But at the same point, it doesn't deal with striking power, how, like, for instance, you might think, okay, I need to learn to defend myself. Let's enter a taekwondo, a karate class, which deals with a lot of striking and kicking. If you're an 130-pound woman and you come up against a 250-pound male that wants to beat you into the ground until he can get what he wants, it's going to be a tough fight no matter if you're a black belt or not.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I really like Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu because it's they call it the little man's martial art. Because it was all about using strength or technique over strength and learning to use your opponent's body against them. And the Gracies, which are the family who created the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, were known to be a really small family. They were not very big.
Physically small.
Physically small, yeah. If you watch the very first UFCs, which is the ultimate fighting championship for the United States, it was pretty much fighters from all across the United States and the world came together to show who was the toughest fighter, who was the best. And at that time, it was hilarious because you saw a lot of those macho American dudes with the kind of, what are they called?
Mustache.
The mustache going across, you know, looks like jumped off a bike and they're just ready to brawl, karate masters, you know. And the first three Ultimate Fighting Championships were won by the Gracie. Hoist Gracie was his name. And you watch, he's a small guy. I think he was like 135 pounds, mm-hmm. 140, 45 pounds. And he was beating guys 250, you know, huge people. But the point of the matter is it comes down to technique. And I just want to recommend Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu to all people, not just women. But the fact is with Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, I guarantee if they took about a year of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, it'd be almost impossible to ever get raped because, I mean, for instance, for the style that I use, I'm an expert, or not an expert, I know how to use my guard, you could say. And what guard is focusing is using your legs. So I use my legs to choke people out and break arms and stuff like that. For a girl, it would be pretty much impossible to get anywhere near their legs in a sexual position if they knew jiu-jitsu. So
it's good to learn self-defense.
Mm-hmm. And I would love to hear of more Brazilian jiu-jitsu grapplers breaking some rapist arm and choking somebody out.
Aloha, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello.
Yes. Was that a gentleman speaking?
Yes, a young man.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the truth of the matter is, just like that guy spent all his time about breaking bones, this is guy. Let's talk about it on a guy's perspective. When I grew up, I never saw none of this nasty stuff. There might have been a kid down the street that had a dirty magazine. Or I think the problem is men have two brains. One's in their pants, one's in their head. And it takes an honorable man to show respect to women. Like I said, when I grew up as a child, that stuff wasn't around. For some reason, it's so terrible what's out there. And so people are men who think with their in their pants and are not honorable. They get out there and they're so inundated with this nastiness that's out there. If they can't, like you said, a beautiful lady would walk by, provocative. I would look at her and, you know, and I think to myself, oh my God, you know, what a beautiful girl. And, oh, give me 5 minutes. And, you know, and, but it just goes through my head and out. I don't think of any kind of harm or, you know, if my wife could hear my inside brain, any wife hear a man's brain, they would just go, oh my God, he's so sick. Well,
hey, honesty.
Introducing you honestly to what men are like. With this
Shh, man,
freedom.
Giving us away.
Pardon me?
No, that,
no,
thank
no, I'm
you.
Sorry.
Thank
continue.
You.
Well, with the freedom that we, you know, I was born in the 50s, and we experienced tremendous personal freedoms. Now it's girls gone wild. Guys gone wild. The YouTube videos, I guess those aren't too bad because they can't have, but I'm not a computer person. And we got our first computer, me and the wife, like 2 years ago. And, oh, my God, my son showed me a few things, and I went, son, it's unbelievable. So I just think that, because I don't hear about women raping men.
They're stronger. I mean, it can.
I hear all the nastiness coming from men, and we have two brains. And I don't know, if I had my way, I'd abolish all the nastiness. You know, that would be my personal prep. There's nothing a lady's going to be able to do.
But then you go into freedoms when you start doing that.
It's so prevalent out there. You can see child stuff. You can, I've never seen it, but this is what I hear. It's just, guys are nasty.
Right.
When we got our freedom, I mean, the gentleman just talking, self-defense is not the answer. You can break all the bones you want. Castration is what I would be thinking.
Well, I think the answer in the military and what people are coming together to do is to create a system where people can be prosecuted. And I think they're a certain kind of perpetrator that's a serial perpetrator. And I think I'm not an expert and not
well,
super.
It's happening to everybody now. Look at that congressman or the rep, Wiener. Sending pictures of this is mm-hmm. a nice guy, I'm sure he was, but what I'm getting at is we have two brains, and once that second brain gets inundated with nastiness, it is so hard for a guy. I'm talking and you know, I'm being an honest guy.
Right, I appreciate your honesty. You're talking about animal nature.
Yeah, you know.
But that doesn't make a man into a rapist.
Little boys growing up, something grew on our body. You know, when I was in third grade, I thought I was a sick person because something in my pants was growing, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm 8 years old, 7 years old, I'm at school, what is this? You know, my son at 5 years old was in the bathroom, and I heard this noise, and I went in there, what are you doing, son? And he was punching himself between his legs, and he said to me, Daddy, my piece is really big, and I don't like it.
Oh, no.
Well, you know, this is how guys are. I don't know if girls experience such things. My wife says, you know, she's never done anything like that. So, you know, so when you have guys looking at nasty, weird stuff, it'll take the nicest, like I said, that gentleman Wiener, he's got a wonderful family. The other representative that was fooling around with this lady, you hear about it all the time. I just think our minds get inundated with that junk, and the next thing you know, we're walking the streets. And then the military, you throw girls into a camp full of boys, and God bless them. I was in the military, and I have total respect, but, you know, you're living in a different times.
Exactly. We're living in completely different times.
2013, and those boys are out there watching porn. Those boys are out there, you know, talking terrible things, and the girls are right there. So that's about all I have
right.
to say. I just tried to be an honest guy.
Thank you. Thank you for your honesty. I think
the only way to solve it is get rid of every man on the planet.
I appreciate your honesty. I think he is bringing up a really good point. We're going to hear from our underwriters in a moment that make KKCR, Hanalei KAQA, Kilauea possible. And then I do want to talk for a moment about the bystander, because I think that the role of the bystander is very important. So Kauai Soapbox Live is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with Haleakala Solar, and then I think
Haleakala Solar is opening an office on Kauai in the Kukui Grove Mall. Grand opening Saturday and Sunday, June 1st and 2nd. Operating in Hawaii for 36 years, full service installers of photovoltaic and solar hot water systems, including solar pool panels and battery systems. Financing available. More information online at haleakalasolar.com.
Kauai residents and businesses will now be able to recycle their electronic waste, e-waste, every month. E-waste includes computers and accessories, televisions, office equipment, audio and video equipment, and handheld devices such as cell phones, pagers, and two-way radios. E-waste will be accepted free of charge. No quantity limits. All brands accepted. E-waste recycling opportunities are as follows. This Friday and Saturday, May 24th and May 25th, at Vidina Stadium from 8 to 4. Starting June 7th and 8th, every second Friday and Saturday of each month at the Kauai Resource Center, 3460 Ahukini Road from 7:45 to 4:15. Please note, all materials left outside of these dates and times will be considered illegal dumping and disposed of as mixed waste. Further information available from the recycling office at 241-4841 or online at kauai.gov/recycling.
Mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. So I want to talk a little bit. Let's talk about the bystander. And actually, Melissa, you brought this forward to me. Do you want to tell us what we mean by the bystander? I can do it. Okay, she said no. We look at this continuum between the perpetrator and the victim. And yes, those are real things out there, and we have the outlier, like we had the honest man just talking about how some guys really get overtaken by their animal nature. And then there are extremes maybe when people are unconscious of the signals that they might be sending out. But in that continuum in the middle, most people, they might be attracted to somebody, but they're not going to step beyond the line. And when there's the bystander around, there's elements like if there's dirty jokes or movie after movie that just victimizes women, because I feel like that's what the last caller was referring to, and I agree with it, that you can look at almost any film, any TV station at some point, they have a victimized woman as the plot element that brings forward the hero. So we have a culture that does this to girls. And so when people are become the bystanders, when they watch and they laugh at these things, or if somebody's obnoxious, or if there's just degrading comments that are made and it's ignored, it basically endorses that behavior. And to be frothing over films or video games or things that really objectify people. And I also really want to say to that effect, sometimes, you know, gender neutral people or different gendered people, when those objectified and people laugh at that, it facilitates this mindset, because that person who maybe has the predatory mindset or the disrespectful mindset, they can give life to it with their words, and nobody calls it on them. It moves them a little bit forward. It raises the baseline.
Yeah.
They were saying that these kind of things happen in an environment of where sexual harassment is the norm and it's accepted. And it seems like there's been a better job done with that in the workplace. It's a very different place than it used to be. But I think the military seems to be behind the civilian life in the workplace.
It's interesting, you know, where we've come from. You know, one comment I'll make about that, if we can go back and look at some of the roles of this and the bystander, you know, there have been study after study after study in terms of when we talk about the gender roles and how bystanders can either help the situation and challenge some of that or not, right? When you look at the studies about pornography and the role of pornography in a culture and a society, I want to be accurate here. It's either Sweden or one of the other Scandinavian country. For many, many years, they did not allow pornography. When you looked at the percentages or the numbers of sexual assault, and I mean sexual assault on a continuum, because there's lots of different things that can happen that we label sexual assault. Even with the Pentagon study, when they talked about 26,000 people being sexually assaulted, I don't know if that meant 26,000 people being raped, right? Because there's lots of different things that can happen, unwanted sexual contact in one form or another. But with the pornography, when it was banned and they didn't have it, the sexual assault, reported sexual assault, and they had very high penalty for offenders of any kind of sexual assault, it was very, very low.
So it helped.
It absolutely helped, because we're talking, going back to that objectification, the lack of empathy, the lack of understanding what is happening with this other person, consent, all those things that are involved in that kind of relationship, right? When that country then started to allow pornography back into the country, you started to see the effects.
And more acts of violence.
Exactly.
So I think it comes down to our entire culture as a whole. And you know, as we were talking about it earlier, sex sells. You know, that's what almost all the merchandising is going for.
And who are they trying to sell to, though?
Obviously, the younger generations. I mean, the young kids and the people that are going to be begging their parents for this.
Or
the youngest people, it seems, is what they're aiming for. But, I mean, if you look at MTV, for instance, like growing up as a kid, MTV, I mean, actually, literally, I was 2 feet away from the television watching MTV when I was like 2 years old, you know, just focused on it. Nowadays, they don't even play music.
Yeah.
It's music television, and they don't even play music.
Yeah.
And you've watched how that one channel, for instance, has progressed over the past 20 years. And that's all they sell, is it's nothing but sex, drama, and this American lifestyle that is just throwing us in the gutter. You know, it's bringing us, our youth, nowhere.
Right.
And when we talked about, you know, pornography, the man that had called in earlier, you know, he had only had a computer for 2 years,
right?
And he's seeing all this stuff, and it's crazy. But I mean, when I was growing up as a kid, I think I seen my first pornographic film when I must have been like 10 or 11, like I was young, and it was like walking up to a computer and like a bunch of other boys were looking at something, and it's just there in our society.
Right.
For a young boy or even girl, it doesn't matter, for a young person to not come across any pornographic material or sexually suggestive stuff online is almost impossible. It's where we can get any information we want to touch fingers, and the kids are getting better and better at it. So for an adult, for a parent to try and shield their kids from this sex-craved society, it's a mission and a half.
Well, we do have a cultural issue for sure. Okay, aloha, you're on the air.
Are you talking to me?
Yes, I am.
Oh, perfect. I really like the subjects you are choosing. They're very educational for our society, and I'm a father, and of course I had a mother, and it's amazing how things have changed, and I'm glad these issues are coming up, especially assault. It's happened in our society. It happens on this island. you know, I've known a woman that worked with sexual assault victims here, and she had to leave because our government's not really doing that much about it. It's not just the military. I think it's just the way it is in our society, and it's kind of disgusting. I get really frustrated with how humanity has been, you know. I mean, it's like, I feel like we're the junior high school or even elementary school of the planet in our big, you know, in the big picture. You know, this is just a little planet. Why can't we? I mean, I'm totally against military issues, you know, because my whole family fought in all most of the wars, even the Iraq War. I mean, it's just like somebody's related to me, or, you know, I lost a uncle in Korean War. He stepped on a landmine. My father fought in the Philippines when the Japanese Imperial Army took over. He died at 96, but it's just, it never ends. But, you know, to see how our society is, it's just like, I'm kind of disgusted. It's like,
I completely,
you know,
agree.
If there is a God and comes down and says, you know, what happened? You know, all the animals in nature is going to point at us and say, they did it. You know, I mean, you know, those humans did it. They really screwed up. that's the point I'm getting across. It's just like, I hope we're learning from all this, and I just really appreciate the subjects that you guys bring up. You know, we're really blessed to have a great radio station and that's going around the world, and I appreciate the time. You know, thank you for having me on the phone.
Well, thank you.
Thank you very much for calling.
Okay, aloha.
Aloha.
So, yeah, I think, like, shining lights on things, mm-hmm. I do feel that it comes down to respect, but it is a huge cultural issue. I have to say, I haven't seen those things on my computer. They don't seem to come up on my computer. It's, I don't know why.
Really, Felicia?
They don't. So,
I'm so surprised.
So, you know, we got another caller. Aloha, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. I just wanted to call back because...
Okay, can you turn your radio off?
My radio... Oh, I know what it is. There.
That's worse.
Can you turn your radio off?
Oh, the radio.
The radio, because it echoes.
Sorry about that.
No worries. There you go.
I was going to say that what I find somewhat appalling, it seemed like in years gone by, their magazine would say, it'll be a picture of a pretty girl on the cover girl. Or, you know, they'd say, oh, look at the pretty girl. And it usually was a full length of a girl, right? Now, when they say, look at the pretty girl, it'll be two bathing suit bottoms walking across the screen. Now, I mean, hello, that maybe give you an idea that the idea is that we have an active advertising industry that is promoting the idea of using sexual and, you know, images of objectifying women as the bathing suit bottoms, basically, mm-hmm. not looking at the whole person. And I think that's a real problem. I think we have an advertising industry that's catering to corporate interests that are using the debasement of women and sexual interpretations of women only as a way to promote their products. Mm-hmm. And what we really need is to develop an understanding that men and women are not orgasms and vaginas and penises. What they are is human beings with hearts and souls, and they're heroic human beings who think beautiful thoughts, and that you don't see any of that kind of stuff being used. Is anyone thinking about Betsy Ross, who did made the flag, or Joan of Arc as a heroine?
Harriet Tubman.
Drug-addicted musicians who died. Mm-hmm. Okay, we have a sick culture, and we need to take care of it.
Well, I know that there are ways to deal with that, and somewhat when I had my store, when I would be buying, I would not buy the lines that did not respect women. And there were many lines that could sell well, and and they have really cute advertising in the most base way, and even I laugh when I see it, but no way, I'm not going to create that as something that is bringing our young people towards it. You know, when you see kids wearing graphics and shirts that really are self-destructive and they don't realize it, you know, I think that there's some responsibility that goes up the chain, and people can make a difference with what they purchase. I think people should be involved in the purchases that their children make. If you're in a store that is bringing forward things that is promoting bad ethic, I think it's worth just kindly saying something to the store owner. We live in a small community. You can do that here.
This is true, and I think that's a very good solution that we all need to. It's like buying products from chains that are undercutting local stores and getting products very cheap at places where they're buying, where their buyers are going to Bangladesh and getting products that they can sell for undercutting everybody else because the products were made, by slave labor practically. Okay, that's the same thing. Don't go to those stores. And the other thing that, look at the, you know, we live in Kauai. I work right on Main Street. I'm telling you, I am somewhat appalled at the way some people walk around. I mean, they're walking around in these jockstrap-looking bathing suit bikinis with their bottoms fully exposed. And they're teenage girls. They think they're wearing the hottest, cutest fashion. But little do they know that that's putting them also in the realm of objectification. Because what guy isn't going to be looking at their bottom instead of looking at their heart, okay? I mean, or looking into their eyes. I mean, this is a problem that and I think it has a lot to do with the advertising media and also with the corporations that are using the media.
I completely agree. It's a major part is the media and the companies that are advertising all this. But then again, it has to go down to the customers, the people that are buying them. You know, I have lots of female friends that will post a photo on Facebook or Instagram, and it's just them smiling them and pretty much just showing off their top or their bottom. And it's just like, today is a beautiful day. And it's obviously what they're trying to show off. And that goes down to our whole kind of look of the community.
Come on, you know, wake up. We have to teach the people there's nothing wrong with wearing appropriate beach attire at the beach, but you don't have to walk down Main Street. And also, guys come into the store. Yeah, one time some guy comes in, literally his pants were hanging off his male organ. Mm-hmm. His bottom was totally showing. He's walking into a children's store with his pants falling
off.
Well,
at least the legs are long now. When I first moved here, my sister and I would joke because guys would be in these little tiny surf trunks, and then you'd see more of them than you really wanted to when they were sitting down. You know, that was pretty routine.
Now they
you'd
have
be
them
like,
hanging
oh my
off
gosh.
Their dicks and their bottom hanging out. I mean, it's come on.
Okay, well.
Well, I guess we need to have a little more fashion consulting with the
well, I think you're the caller. I think you're the caller that called in before and said, you know, look, we were all born naked and we should be able to walk down the street naked mm-hmm. without attacking each other.
That's true.
And I think
something difference between being naked and being provocative.
Right, but I think there's a bigger discussion about how do we be the sexual humans that we are and still respect each other and respect ourselves
completely,
regardless of what we're wearing.
Reality to ourselves, and we don't have to advertise it. And, you know, that's all. I don't think we were born to advertise our sexuality. I don't really believe that's the case.
Well, thank you so much for calling. We are just about, okay, thank you so much.
Aloha.
Aloha. So I want to let both of you really have a moment to say your perspective.
Sure. You know, and I think I want to go back to almost your very first comment when we started the whole segment, right, about how this is a men's issue. And in that context, it's also a greater community issue. But when we talk about it being a men's issue, and one of the questions I've asked, you know, who are they marketing to? And as it relates to, I think they're marketing a lot toward men, because why? Historically, who's got the more power? It goes back to all of those different isms, sexism, classism. You know, so many of them are just kind of intertwined and interconnected. And I would refer people to a TED Talk, and Melissa, I know you sent this to me too, to kind of further the conversation or get a different perspective on this from Jackson Katz, who's been a long time advocate, I think, in this field, and really an advocate for men's involvement in this field. And because the years I've been involved, we've come a long way, but we have a long way to go. And I absolutely, totally believe it cannot be resolved without men's involvement. Mm-hmm. Just cannot. We can, I think the conversation, we brought it up in terms of the women's movement. We're talking about it more. I think sexual assault has been happening from day one. We're just able to talk about it more. We're more aware of it. And as it goes on, let's bring our brothers, our fathers, our cousins, our grandpas in and say, you know, you guys work with each other too. Work with us, but you need to be working with each other in terms of, let's not buy those products either. Hey, they're marketing toward us. Let's tell them we're not going to buy it.
Right. I think it's kind of like we could be discussing murder, and murder has happened since day one.
Right.
And it's a terrible thing, and we need to stop it, and there's nothing that makes it right. But these are, you know, aberrations of human behavior, but they do happen. Fortunately, not that often. I think when we're looking at some of these media issues, shock value sells. And so they just have to keep upping the threshold. So they want to have a little bit more gore than the last film or a little bit more fantastic jumping or aerials in the scene with the action scene, a little bit more shock value in the sexuality. And probably even when the people are creating these things, they're just raising the bar just a little bit higher than the last people, maybe with not always anticipating how that becomes part of our collective dream.
There's another wonderful documentary that, again, my daughter insisted that I watch called Misrepresentation. And it's something that families, you know, guys, women should definitely watch. It really makes you see how we're all being brainwashed.
Tell us what the theme of the movie is.
The theme is how women are represented in the media and through time.
And that is?
They've been represented as sexual objects.
Right.
Absolutely.
Or almost, possession.
You know, right. Possession, brainless, objects.
I think it was the wife of the mayor, Gavin Newsom.
It's Jennifer Seibel Newsom, who had been a model, and she made this brilliant documentary. And she's also one of the executive producers on, I believe, on The Invisible War, and she's been a huge force in moving all these things forward.
So we want everybody to come out and see. So to the details of seeing this documentary, The Invisible War, you're right, it's available on Netflix, it's available
on
iTunes.
And you can actually, it's hijacked on YouTube. You can probably watch it there.
But you will miss out on an amazing discussion, I think, afterward in terms of how can we come together in our community and support change. And, you know, I believe, too, that the military has far reach. And knowing that if the military can really successfully address this, and I think that they can, that can have ramifications for others, us, who are not maybe directly in the military. But that would be a fantastic role model, I think, for our communities and how we could move forward.
The same way as it was with racism, right?
Racism, and also don't ask, don't tell. You know, and that's a very, very recent, I think, example of how military can take these kinds of issues and be a real role model and leaders. And let's hope, like Congresswoman Gabbard said, being victim-centered, holding accountability at the utmost, highest levels, and let's do the prevention work in the very beginning.
And what I really liked in the film is I thought that the selections of people that he took, they were very clear examples of professional women doing their job. They weren't in this gray area of where were they at or what were they doing.
Well, that's why some of the talk in this call has been a little upsetting for me, because when you listen to these women and you see the dedication and professionalism and intelligence and capabilities that they have, and they're wearing a uniform, you know, for most of the time. And, you know, I don't know if their hair was in a ponytail, but they don't look like, you know, a scantily clad person any of those kind of things. And so I also want to say, if you're listening to this and you're having some some hesitation about coming to see the film and maybe not wanting to, you know, watch a difficult subject as I did. It's really incredibly moving, and I think you'll be very happy that you did. Everybody that I've talked to about it that actually opened up and experienced it has had just as amazing experiences, Eric and Felicia and many others.
Yeah, it was very well done and not salaciously presented.
And if you want to bring, you know, children that it would be appropriate for, there's no violence, there's no sex scenes, there's... Right.
Yeah, like I'd heard this, what we were talking about, I was like, okay, I'm going to have to watch a movie about rape in the military. And I was like, well, this doesn't have anything to do with me, but it's going to be on the show, so I should watch it. After watching it, I do agree that it has something to do with everyone. And you know what? I think everybody should watch this film. So, you know what? If you're considering it, you know, you're 50-50, I highly think you should do it. I guarantee you won't regret it.
And a good showing both supports the victims who go through that, and it makes a powerful statement to our leaders. When we've talked about the civilian elements of this, why I've brought that forward also is that probably the majority of our listeners are not in the military.
Right.
And I think that's something that can happen when they hear this, is they go, oh, well, it's the military. What do you expect? You know, because we tend to be a little bit, at least for this show, I would say a little bit left-leaning, you know, a little bit more people who aren't likely to have ever been in the military. So I'm bringing out this stuff that it is not just a military issue. This is a very important military issue, but I'm also trying to reach out to people that are out there, like how they can have help. That's why the YWCA is in here. The YWCA can help anybody. And again, when I was talking about the hairstyle, there's nothing provocative about that hairstyle. So that's an athletic hairstyle. Just like when you look at the statistics, something like 30% of women who are victimized by a stranger have a ponytail. And you would never, ever consider that. That is anything but dressing provocatively. That's a normal way. But it makes you more vulnerable if you're in the wrong place. That's situational awareness, just knowing it's not that you should never go play tennis, yes, but, right, you know, right. Like maybe if you're walking home from work, no, you know, or something like that. It's just that's a way that you're vulnerable. There's lots of really good training on how you deal with getting in your car or in a garage in a big place. Now, fortunately here, I don't think it's... very much of a problem. I don't want you would know more than this, Renee, than me, but this isn't New York City. It's not.
Yeah, the you know, the percentage being on Kauai, we talk about the national average, where the national average is it's a person that you know 75% of the time. National average on Kauai, it jumps to 95-97% of the time.
Okay.
You know that person. It's rare that it's a stranger. What happens is we hear about that more because those types of cases are more likely to go forward.
To be reported,
right. Because it is a stranger, there's not the same dynamics of, I know this person, I have a relationship with this person, or my family does, or somebody I know does, like we do on Kauai. So, and I think that, you know, with the effects of sexual assault, it's the same whether you're in the military and you're sexually assaulted, or you're outside of the military, sexually assaulted, it still has that profound effect on you. And we are here. We do have on Kauai a sexual assault response team, Melissa, that you alluded to. You don't have to report in order to have victim support. And you can even get a forensic exam without making a police report right away. If you decide to change your mind down the road, then you still have some evidence and things if it was collected. But you can call our hotlines. We have a 24-hour hotline. It's somebody, a trained advocate who's been, most of them have years of experience. We're there 24 hours a day. You can call 245-6362. You can call 245-4144. We also have crisis counselors who are available to go out 24 hours a day, every single day of the year. We're available for people to reach out to, whether it's for yourself or a family member or you have questions, we can be there to help. So it's confidential. There's no cost. Please feel free to call.
I want to remind everyone the screening's Friday at Kauai Community College at 6:30.
Mm-hmm.
It's free.
Mm-hmm.
And the screenings on Saturday and Sunday at the Waimea Theater are also free. Did I say 6 o'clock?
Yes, yes. 6 o'clock.
And I want to go back to what Eric was saying that, you know, I too thought, you know, I don't have anything to do with the military. You know, why should this matter to me before I saw it? And after I saw it, I really felt differently. I felt like, you know, I wanted to stand with these men and women, and I want to be a part of the solution, mm-hmm. even if it just means watching the film and talking to people about it.
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you for bringing it forward, and it's a really great example about Kauai Community Radio, mm-hmm. because when people have an issue that's important and they bring it to us, we're really happy to do it. I think it's really appropriate that this is happening on Memorial Day. History of Jazz with Kirk Smart is coming up in a moment.
I just wanted to say we had a couple callers real
yes.
quick. One of them wanted to just say thank you so much to Melissa and thank you so much to Felicia to having this subject on the air, and it's been really amazing for them to listen to it. They just wanted to say thank you. And also another caller called in was suggesting maybe we should have a class maybe through kindergarten till 12th grade empowering men and women to look past how the society labels us and empower us. So
great idea.
Here, here. Yeah.
Thank you, Felicia and Eric, for having
Thank you.
Us here.
You're very welcome. So
for information, they can go to the YWCA website, ywcakauai.org.
Right on. Okay, well...
You want to tell everyone one more time when those times and days are showing for the movie?
Friday at 6:30 p.m. at Kauai Community College, and Saturday and Sunday, the 1st and 2nd, at 6 o'clock at the Waimea Theater.
Right. And if people are on Oahu, the YWCA of Oahu on Friday will show that at their facility
at
Fuller Hall at 6:32, I believe. And we will have panel discussions after each showing, and Representative Tulsi Gabbard will only be there on the Friday night at the college.
Just to let you know, Misrepresentation is available on DVD at the Princeville Library.
Ah, excellent. It's a great right. film.
That's
it's a
great
film.
Yeah, and there's all kinds of support groups. And you know what? People, we love you. You're all loved. And when this stuff is, you know, put in an element of shame, you know, it does happen to so many people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, don't feel alone. It's you get past it, you know, especially like with the people in those films. They had so much healing being mm-hmm. able to bring it out and to speak about it. And, you know, you're loved, you're whole, you know, it's all good. And so anyway, thank you for listening to KKCR, Hanalei KAQA Kilauea. And now in Haleiwa K284AL.